Welcome to Lead Time Chats, where you can listen in on unscripted conversations between engineering leaders and other influential folks in tech. I'm Jean, and I'll be your host. Lead Time Chats is brought to you by Range. Range helps hybrid teams check in asynchronously about what matters most. Know what's happening through status updates that pull from tools like GitHub and Jira without scheduling yet another meeting. Checking in with Range creates more focused time for heads-down work, all while feeling a deeper sense of connection and belonging with your team. To learn more about Range, you can check it out at range.co. Hi, Pat. Thanks for joining me for Lead Time Chats.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me. Nice to chat to you.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you here because I know you do a ton of training for tech leads, engineering managers, all sorts of people who are moving into leadership roles, as well as, you know, coaching, leadership coaching, very similar to kind of what I was doing pre-Range. And so I'm just thrilled to talk to you. And I know one of the things, you know, specifically you have a course on tech leads, but also just generally you have a lot of writing and courses out there around like, what are the different flavors of tech leadership, right? Like when an engineer or an IC is thinking about moving into leadership, there's a lot of different options. So maybe we can start there. Like what, you know, from your point of view, like what are the different flavors and how does one go about choosing their own adventure there?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there are countless ways. I think that's the exciting thing about our industry. It's still sort of evolving and developing. I think in the US, they often talk about the two-track model. So you can go into engineering. And I tend to think of management as sort of authority to make decisions. And typically, it's about people management. So hiring, firing, staffing, recruiting, retention. That kind of comes part and parcel with a lot of engineering management. But there's also in the IC track in the US, they often talk about staff and principal engineers. I actually kind of like to refine that into two sort of specializations, because when I think about IC track, I typically think about a technical leadership track. So people who are leading technical topics and technical teams, but not necessarily responsible for people management. And they need strong leadership skills. So they need to be able to build relationships. They need to be able to influence. They need to help sort of help decisions, but don't have the maybe decision-making authority. So they have to lean on good leadership skills. And then the sort of third track, which I often call the trident. So if you could imagine like three sort of spokes, this is where I would consider a bit more of the pure IC model. And so I think some staff engineer metaphors fit well. And I think a good example of this is, you know, if you think about like huge old companies like IBM or maybe Microsoft or like massive companies, you typically have these very high powered sort of engineers that are purely individual contributors, right? So they specialize in, I don't know, writing that new programming language compiler. You know, they're very specialist in that sort of sense. Most companies don't need that level of specialism or perhaps research R&D. Sometimes they fall into maybe a IBM fellow is kind of one of those kind of special titles for these special pure IC type people. And so that's why I also tend to think that that path of the pure IC tends to be a little bit shorter. But I think the great thing about our industry is, you know, there are so many different roles and opportunities to lead and to apply new skills because we're constantly coming up with new fields and technology. So I think, you know, staff engineer is probably one of the more recent sort of titles that sort of has merged around sort of even project management. You know, you have technical program managers, which is also a fairly new nebulous role for a lot of them.
Yeah.
So lots of different flavors.
Yeah. And I imagine there's like, so you described the three flavors, kind of like tech leadership, engineering management, staff engineering, and then I've definitely seen things that like Asana or like you or Will Larson has put out for each of those, right? Like the different archetypes for engineering managers, different archetypes for staff engineers and for tech leads. And so it feels a bit like, even if you just focus on those three, those can look very different on different at different companies on different teams. And so as much as we want to like put them on these tracks, I feel like it is pretty ambiguous as well. It's just generally like people, tech leadership, and IC, but there's a lot of blurring along those lines as well.
Absolutely. And I think that's why it's useful. You know, I think it's great. A lot of people choose these sort of terms, archetypes, because it's kind of like, No, it's kind of some good examples, but it's not the only way, which is great for everyone because you can almost carve your own path that way.
Right. Yeah, I remember reading Camille Fournier's Manager's Path, and she kind of lays out like, these are all the things that need to get done, right? Like, this is typically what a VP Eng does, this is typically what a CTO does, but, you know, depending on the person, depending on the company, you can kind of mix and match and fill in as needed. But I'm curious, how would you describe your own tech leadership flavor?
That's a great question. So I think one of the things and why I maybe focused on the tech leadership sort of like the technical leadership path is I did a lot of consulting for a lot of my life. And so I didn't really have a lot of like authority, right? So you're often working through the authority of your sponsor who brings you in as a consultant, and they ultimately own those decisions. And so you have to really work with your influencing skills. And I think that really helped me when I stepped into being a sort of CTO with management responsibility, because I didn't have to sort of rely on sort of, I need to exercise my power kind of sort of authority sort of perspective. Is I could build stories, I could create shared purpose. And so I tend to lean a lot more heavily on the sort of general leadership sort of ideas, because I also think that's what good leaders look like. I mean, I think it's important as good leaders to be able to hold people accountable to things that they promise, but also, you know, it's not what good leaders and managers will be doing. So right. I'd probably say I kind of stick to the influencing and the leadership path a lot more.
Yeah, the good managers are not going around saying, do this because I said so, right? I think there's a common thing where people are like, oh, when I'm a manager, then I'll be able to do things my way because I'll have the authority. But, you know, doing a lot of the training that I did or that I ran, I think what I realized was like, no one really, like, influence without authority is such a resonant term because no one thinks they have authority. Yeah. Like, even managers, even like, you know, C levels, like, everyone's like, oh, I can't get people to do what I want them to do. And like, let me figure out influence without authority.
You're absolutely right. And I think a lot of people fall into that trap of, I just need the position. It'll just give me the authority. Right. Right? People listen to me. And actually, maybe not as much as you think.
Yeah. And I guess personally, I feel like my path has definitely been more on the people side of things. And now is really going in this interesting, well, actually with the coaching and training, went in a very like, I guess, kind of strayed from those three main tracks and has now kind of come back into working at a tech company, but kind of integrating that more public facing and like, you know, a bit of like content marketing, eng leadership blend, which has been interesting and something I see with a lot of other more public facing eng leaders as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a huge value add for a lot of companies. And I remember having a recent conversation with somebody as well of saying, do I need to have a public persona? I'm not an extrovert or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of what the availability bias kind of thing where like you see all these people who have public personas and I'm kind of part of one of those. But also there's amazing engineering leaders who don't do that as well. It's just maybe you don't know about them. So there are a lot of counter examples.
Exactly. That's what Will Larson mentioned on our chat too, of like, you absolutely do not have to. Like for every person you see that has a very public role, like there's so many more that are heads down at their company, you know, they've built a strong network. And so there's no real detriment if you enjoy it and you feel like that's the way you want to make impact, go for it.
Absolutely.
So one of the things I want to talk to you about is, you know, through all these different transitions, I know one of the things that you've talked about is that systems thinking is a critical skill, especially as engineers move from, you know, just thinking about their own work to thinking about coordinating work with a lot of engineers or, you know, doing people management and all through all of these engineering leadership roles that systems thinking is really critical. And I was wondering if you could just speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think early on, I worked for, old behemoth.
What was that?
Lots of structure. And yeah, so I think one of the interesting things there that I learned is, you know, people behave according to the rules of the system, right? Mm-hmm. So they play to roles and then play to things. And as I started to go into consulting, one of the things that, you know, you get involved in with consulting is to help organizations get better. I've seen that through the moving from waterfall to agile, moving from manual processes to continuous delivery of sort of integrating silos into cross-functional teams and helping them, you know, transform their sort of technical practices along the way as well. And I realized that as an individual contributor in a team, you add a lot of value through writing code, building features. But if you want to have like that long-lasting change, you kind of have to understand what's driving people within that organization and system. And so that's where, for me, like the systems thinking perspective comes in, which is, it's very hard to sort of change a person if, you know, they see their role as a certain function within an organization. You have to think about what's going to incentivize them to want to adopt new ways of working or change behavior. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of need to work with the people who kind of end up creating those systems. And so I think that's really the responsibility of management at different mm-hmm. levels about how they delegate work, how they prioritize work, how they make decisions as an organization. And so for me, I tend to think about that from a sort of systems thinking perspective as to a lot of the elements that do drive that, and therefore you get some interesting emergent behavior from the interactions of who's working in that system, but how that sort of system is set up and structured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that just made me think of like this really common complaint people have is like, oh, you know, people aren't picking up this, you know, these certain types of work. Like, why aren't engineers doing this type of work? It's like, well, you know, everyone just wants to work on the next new thing, you know, the new feature or whatever. And it's like, well, look at what your company is rewarding, right? How are people getting promoted? How are like, what's being like brought up at the all hands to celebrate, and like work backwards from there. And you might figure out why people are not willingly working on kind of the grunt work, unless you are also celebrating the that sort of grunt work, right? The like tedious tasks and explaining why those things are important. That's something I've seen that's pretty common at companies.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you touched upon that, you know, like what's being rewarded or measured. And it reminds me of the Ilya Goldratt from the sort of theory of constraints. So tell me how you measure me and I'll tell you how I behave. And that's mm-hmm. really about thinking about what is the reward process in organizations. So yeah. Be it formal through financial or like monetary or promotions, or even just how people get recognition and sort of what people get encouraged to do.
That also reminds me of, I think Jocelyn Goldfein had a video or a talk or something a few years back. And it really struck me. She said, you know, a lot of engineering orgs go through this process where they define their values and, you know, they have this list of aspirational values, but anyone at the company kind of rolls their eyes because what the values say and how the company actually operates, there's such a large gap, right? And she said I think she participated in this activity where, you know, they didn't talk about values, but they were prompted to put up sticky notes for all the ways that people are successful at this company. So what do you need to do to be successful, whether that's personal attributes, types of projects, and then put them all up on the board, group them together, and like, well, those are your company values, right? Like, that is actually what your company values. That's what you need to do to be successful. And I found that really just kind of flipping it on its head and yeah, really insightful.
Yeah, what a great exercise.
I guess for systems thinking, so you kind of talked about like what the company rewards, like what's amplified, what's celebrated. What are other ways that you see this coming up in the transition to leadership?
So I think there's a couple of different elements. So one of them is seeing interconnections. I think that's mm-hmm. a lot of the essence of systems. And I think part of this is trying to understand what those interconnections are. So, you know, having a strong technical background working in architecture, one of the things I learned very early on is that you can't sort of separate sort of technical architecture from the organization and people who are going to be either working on it or supporting that in operations and a sort of support, or, you know, future teams that are going to sort of evolve it. In some sort of worlds of software, people talk about sort of socio-technocratic sort of systems, in this idea of recognizing that these are sort of inherently sort of connected, is that your social system, you know, will sort of manifest into your technical architecture. So if you have highly functional sort of silos of people, you'll tend to have sort of points of separation, sort of Conway's law, emerge into your architecture. And if that's not what you want, you kind of need to think about your organization design, which a lot of technical architects and technical folk don't really think about. So I think identifying interconnections, particularly hidden connections, are definitely one of those elements. I think a lot of engineering leaders are often thinking about sort of changing a system. They want to improve a system. And so seeing those connections is like a key element. And then also identifying sort of the connections which start to form sort of cascading or reinforcing sort of loop. So, you know, sometimes engineering leaders try something and they sort of hit their head against a process or a rule, and you know what they did just didn't really work. And so they kind of need to sort of be thinking about, I guess, who gets to make decisions about that process and rules, but also, you know, what feedback opportunities that they can actually influence, right? So if there's no feedback loop, for instance, whoever owns that decision may not realize it's actually creating a problem for people in that organization. And so I think that's the thing to sort of, I think, continue to look for as well.
What about, like, have you found successful ways, as you know, during your time as a consultant and now as a coach and trainer, to like help people develop the skill who are maybe not as adept at it naturally?
So I often just encourage people to create a visual model of like, what are these connections? And so it's often just very useful to sort of say, okay, these things affect each other, these have these results, and you end up sort of building a web of sort of interesting, I guess, interconnection. And just simply through that process of sort of externalizing model, I think people get to start to see things that are maybe connected together that they didn't realize were very connected. I think one of the issues that we have as a sort of education, sort of Western education system at least, is we tend to be very sort of break everything up into tiny parts, cause and effect. You know, we affect input, we should affect output as a result. And so it's a very unusual way, because we're not really encouraged to sort of think about that, of sort of seeing a web of sort of interconnected elements.
I had a question top of mind, but I just lost it. Yeah, I do appreciate this, because I think I've had this, like, not quite imposter syndrome, but I've felt like, oh, I'm not a very systems thinking person. Like, I tend to kind of tackle what's in front of me, but some of the things we're talking about, I do think that I may be a scrappy systems thinker. Like, I don't often zoom out and be like, okay, where do we want to be in like 5 years? But maybe that's why I gravitate towards smaller startups, where, you know, that's kind of a moot point to be thinking about that when you're thinking about the next 6 months. So I do appreciate that. And I think it's good to have, like, I remember when I first started working more seriously in infrastructure, feeling like, oh, I'm not an infrastructure person, because I don't have this, like that's not where I go by default. Like, hey, what's the like final vision we want? But I think I realized that actually one of my strengths is kind of like figuring out where we are and what's practical for like the next few steps, and probably having people on both ends of that meeting in the middle and working together on an engineering team is really powerful as well.
And I mean, I think that itself is a really great demonstration of behavior from a systems thinker, right? Because I think that's the thing of like, when you bridge, you know, teams or different perspectives, often you'll both learn something in that process and you end up with an improved result, right? And I think that's one interesting thing I've learned through sort of studying systems thinking, is that there's a lot of like new ideas aren't actually new. It's more about like ideas moving from one domain or specialization into another domain and specialization, because they happen to interconnect at boundaries, right? Conversations or team purposes. I don't think there is like a sort of perfect sort of, I don't pretend to be a perfect sort of systems thinker. I see it as a tool that can offer some new insights and can help, you know, give us new perspectives and options on how to solve problems. But I don't think it's like the only way of thinking as well. So it's just like one of those tools in the toolkit.
Yeah. Oh, I do remember what I was going to ask now. From your experience talking to a lot of different people, what are the kinds of problems or challenges people might, like tech leads or engineering managers or staff engineers, might come across if they aren't that practiced at systems thinking? Like, how does that like show up?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things, I think. So one of them, like, so particularly engineering managers found, is some engineering managers see their role as to manage individuals. So I manage the people on my team. And I go back to Grace Hopper, who talks about, you don't manage people, you lead people and manage things. And the thing for engineering managers to focus on is managing the system. And so the interesting question is, what does that mean for engineering managers? It's not the people. Okay, there's line management, but you don't have to literally tell them what they're doing that day, like you're working with brilliant people. The system is kind of the team environment in which they work in, right? So it's kind of the interesting question about, how do people know what's most important as a team? How do they know how to help each other? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't understand that is kind of a key part for engineering managers to focus on improving that system to help sort of team flow. And so I think that's a trap that I see quite a lot, in that people see engineering management as, I manage the people on my team, versus that sort of environment in which they work. I think for sort of technical leaders or staff engineers, I see this quite a lot in that a lot of people want to improve things, be it technical architecture or processes or some poor neglected system that's ripe for re-architecture. And a very common way a lot of people do this is kind of what I describe as sort of throwing a bomb from afar. You've probably seen this many times. It's like, that system is like the worst system. It has all these problems. And they throw this like document out, typically criticizing all of this stuff. And like, you watch all the engineering managers run around going, ah, who is this person? What are they trying to do? That's a really bad example of trying to change and influence the system, right? Because you destroy trust in that process. You know,
I offended like entire teams of people.
Yeah, it just creates so much stress for everyone involved. And so for me, that's where like I'm thankful for a lot of my consulting experience, because a lot of like the part of solving a problem is leaving the system as a whole in a better place. And often this is also about, you know, trying to identify who are key decision makers or influencers who should also be bought in. So before you throw that bomb that explodes, you know, you're trying to build that buy-in with people about, you know, I want to get more input from people about this thing. Here's what I'm sort of thinking about, the sort of, as you said, the influence without authority, and trying to gain that sort of support before it sort of goes out that way. And when they can work on that, then their ideas about solving that are probably going to be a lot more successful, because you have the people who can make decisions and you get a lot of that sort of backing support. So that's definitely another thing a lot of people don't really think about. They focus on just the technical architecture,
the
problem, and they forget about who's going to support that, who's going to drive that change, who's going to have to make some difficult conversations about where people spend time, because they're not going to spend it on other things that maybe, you know, product or other people are trying to work on.
Yeah. It's interesting, because I feel like sometimes engineers have this reputation of like being really good at systems thinking with technical systems, but then, you know, with people systems, like, oh, I don't know. I can't, you know, I don't have soft skills, right? Like that's someone else. Someone else is going to do that. My manager is going to do that. Or, you know, why don't people just understand my technical spec? Or, and it's funny, because I think like that, I mean, a lot of the work I was doing in my past role was like drawing that bridge for people. I'm like, look, all the skill sets you've learned, like designing technical systems, can be applied to people, right? Like, here's a framework for how to have this conversation with people, and like, go and try to do it. And I remember this one guy came out of our workshop and he was like, yeah, it's like an API for humans. I was like, all right, like, I mean, it's like, yeah, I guess if that's what you came out of it with, like, that's great. Like, because it just feels much more feasible, right? Like to think about people in a way that's like, makes sense. I think people can feel a little bit more fuzzy, or like, oh, I don't understand people's motivations, but like giving people the skills to understand, to have conversations, to understand or get at the root of people's motivations. And then being like, you already have the skills to navigate this system or improve this system, I think is really empowering, but somewhere where like the eng and people side kind of fall apart a lot of times. I'm sure you've seen this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the example that you gave is a really good example about why you've been so effective of like helping people change their perspective, because, you know, to help people recognize some difference, but to translate some skills that they had before into another circumstance, kind of reminds me of like when I run into technical leaders who often say, I don't have great communication skills. I'm not really understood by other people. And, you know, like a lot of the time people are really just building systems that translate from one API or data format to another. And they just need to apply that to themselves of recognizing they're interfacing to a different system.
Like, what does this person care about, right? Like, reframe everything you're saying in those terms. And that's the interface between you and marketing, or you and this other team.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why they just didn't recognize the difference in that system, right? So
yeah. It's really powerful to see people have that kind of light bulb go off and feel like, hey, I can do this, right?
Yeah, super satisfying.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Pat. Really enjoyed talking about systems thinking with you. And I definitely have a lot to think about as well myself.
Great. Likewise. It's a really fun conversation with you. And thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Lead Time Chats. If you'd like to connect, share, and grow with other engineering leaders, join us at leadtime.range.co. Lead Time Community is a space for engineering leaders who aspire to create better working environments for their teams. Hope to see you there.